Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind and beyond the tech news headlines. I am your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal at Tantra Analyst. Well, this is the analyst event season now, where companies are looking to review what they did this year and give a vision for what the next year and beyond holds. We attended another one of those analyst events a few days ago. That one was from Ericsson, held at their D15 Labs Innovation Center in Santa Clara. The day was jam-packed with lots of good sessions. Most importantly, they had presentations and panel discussions with many of their partners, of course. There were reps from the big three, Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile, as well as from Meta, Intel, Google, AWS, Dell, and more. Didn't see anybody from Microsoft though, so that's interesting. The theme of the event was high-performance programmable networks. I think, of course, the emphasis was more on programmability of the networks, as high performance is always given. The focus was more on monetizing 5G and not technology evolution itself. 5G Advanced was only mentioned in the beginning of the day. All the discussions were around APIs, AI, enterprise connectivity, and so on, which I think makes perfect sense. To discuss and analyze all of this, I once again have my friend and fellow analyst, Leonard Lee of NextCur, with me today. He's been a frequent guest here at the show, especially discussing the events. As I mentioned in the beginning, this is the analyst event season, so he's here quite often. Hey, Leonard, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again. It seems like I'm on here all the time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and me on yours, right?
So, yeah. And it's going to be interesting to have this discussion with you. They presented a lot of stuff, and I look forward to this discussion. And let's get it started. Why don't we?
Absolutely. So yeah, let's start with that. So what was your overall impression of the show? Or rather, the event?
The event. I thought it was really well done. There was, like you said, a lot to digest. I think there was an intent to provide a very comprehensive update as to what Ericsson is driving with what they're calling, high-performance programmable networks. But then also building some context around the why around GMP and the new co-announcement that they made back in earlier this year. So it was just a couple of months ago that they did in Boston. So, great. But I was really surprised by the guests that they brought on that are part of the broad ecosystem that they're putting together. Especially around the GMP, NewCo effort. And that was pretty impressive. And I thought the many partners that they brought together at this event added tremendously to the discussion. And I thought it was a very special occasion and, exclusive. I thought it was pretty exclusive for what ended up being a pretty exclusive audience of analysts.
There really is select analysts, which is good. And I agree with you, it was jam-packed, right? It was before we could take notes, and I was live tweeting, and I think we're on LinkedIn before we could finish what we learned in the previous session. There are already a lot of interesting discussion happening in the next session. So, my fingers were tired at the end of the day, typing all of the stuff.
Yeah.
So, and also I think, the focus on monetization, which is the big issue, which made sense, and showing partners, obviously, this is the next phase of 5G is going to be more about industries, the partners, then the operators themselves doing it, right? So that kind of made perfect sense. So, okay, let's get started with the first thing they mentioned, programmability of networks, you know, for critical enterprise needs and system needs and so on. So they had kind of two good examples mentioned there as well, right? So network slicing and energy saving. And mm-hmm. I also liked how they showed about programmability is not, you know, only at one part of the network. It's throughout and highly granular, right? So going from millisecond response time in terms of turning on and off your PAs in the radios to term days and, you know, weeks, months kind of granularity at the higher level for network configuration and so on. So that I think was interesting. It's not just talking about it, but also showing how it is done. And one strange thing was that, you know, we all know Ericsson was a skeptic of Open RAN in the beginning. Now, with all this programmability that they're talking about, which is riding fully on this openness and Open RAN architecture, so they have become kind of the biggest proponents, right? Especially after getting the AT&T contract.
Yeah. I mean, I think Open RAN is there as a tier of interoperability that, you know, obviously all players outside of China need to contend with and deal with, right? I mean, I've said this for a long time. This is an operator's choice, right? You can't push Open on people. Operators are going to make this choice individually or maybe as a coalition or, and, you know, there's a lot of attempts to make this a regulatory requirement or embed it into standards and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, one of the challenges we see with Open RAN and O-RAN adoption is simply because operators just don't want to, or, vendors like Ericsson and others are able to bring to market systems that are not as open, right? The purpose built, that are more performant and scale better. Now, I think what we still need to be very conscious of is that you can have programmability without any of this stuff being open, right? This is really more of that conversation around having a virtualized base and then evolving that into cloud native and then having a cloud native architecture, modularization of, you know, software around, you know, key elements and moving toward like sort of a service-based architecture, right? And then, you know, that all is enabling programmability of the infrastructure in different levels, evolutionary levels, right? And so to me, I thought the programmability stuff was less about Open. It was more about how do you continue to modernize your network and fusing, cloud native, capabilities and architectures and practices and principles on top of a virtualization base, a virtualized RAN base, if you will.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree. So it's I think the combination of virtualizing the network, which is a basic, you know, and then if you want to really scale out and bring in all different kinds of players into the ecosystem, then you have to have open interfaces so that the guys who are developing, application services and architectures at the top of that network have a kind of portability between ecosystems, right? Not just purpose built. So Open RAN is not just for multiple radios sake, but it also for higher levels of openness.
Exactly.
And
I just see it as just a fortunate thing for the Open RAN community, right? Because it's, I mean, one of the things that we're seeing are these like sort of, what they call it, single vendor Open RAN deployments or, you know, pilots and implementations. I mean, this is where the general interest, I think, or the prevailing interest amongst, operators lie. That just simply becomes a benefit for the Open RAN community. It just at least opens that interoperability door so that, like you're saying, these partners can participate depending on the operator's decision, right? This is not a Ericsson decision. This is what the operator wants, whether it's AT&T or who have you. And so it's interesting how how Ericsson is playing kind of like this catalytic role, even though they've been kind of perceived as being sort of the wolf coming into the hen house. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I think the discussion has kind of moved on from mixing and matching radios and the baseband to more now on higher layers, right? In terms of bringing cloud native architecture and then bringing different vendors, especially the software and application and services vendors on that network.
Yeah.
Where I think, you know, they have to work, the operators and vendors have to work openly with the outside ecosystem, the software developer ecosystem, to really monetize this solid and excellent network they have built, right? So I think, and rightly so, all of the discussions during the day was on that, right? So, and then, moving on to the next focus area was on API. So, as you mentioned, there is GSMA working across the board to come up with common APIs for operators to employ so that they have large economies of scale, right? And then Ericsson on its own signed a joint venture with tons of operators to take to the next level and, you know, accelerate the API adoption, right? So that, I think, was a key discussion and theme throughout the day, which made perfect sense. So,
yeah, and it is a big deal for Ericsson, but then I think also for the broader participants, the 12 operators, as well as Google, GCP, who is one of the partners, right? The way that you got to look at it is that the CSPs or the operators are kind of like the suppliers, right?
Yep.
And, they're providing whatever network capabilities and exposing those network capabilities through the APIs. And so this whole GMP NewCo venture is about creating an aggregation service, call it like a sort of an exchange, right? Or that will expose these network capabilities through APIs, right? Everyone calls them network APIs. And like you said, they're being specified by the Kamara project. It's a Linux Foundation project under the GSMA sort of purview of the Open Gateway Initiative, right? And that was announced actually earlier this year. So a lot of this stuff is moving really quickly.
Yeah.
But I think the adoption, that's something that we still have to see, because I think there's general lack of awareness amongst developer communities about what a network API is, right?
Yeah.
And one of the benefits I think that Ericsson is anticipating with the Kamara standardizer, if you want to call them open network APIs, is that getting scalability through that. Because one of the things that they really need to do, and this is something that they've stated, is keep the transaction costs low, right? I mean, they need to be able to help operators expose these networks, network capabilities, and then have them made available and consumable by quote unquote developers at a low cost, right?
Yeah.
And at least with economic scalability, actually, let me take that back. It's not low cost, but with economic scalability, and that's where that those open standards or that open API set is going to be a huge utility, especially if you look at or consider the fact that eventually there are going to probably be many more than 12 operators that are part of this network. But then you're going to have to service probably tens of thousands, if not millions, of developers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, it's very early days.
Yeah.
But things are moving fast, for sure. I had the same questions, but you asked during the event in terms of monetization of these APIs, especially for operators, right? I mean, I asked this question throughout the day a couple of times that, all of this from a technical standpoint looks good, large ecosystem play here, and there are opportunity to scale up. But how is the whole ecosystem making sure operators, which are at the foundation here, are well compensated for all that they are enabling at the top? I mean, you know, 3G and 4G, where operators built the network, but most of the value was taken away by the OTT player. So my question was more on, you know, how the ecosystem is making sure that is not repeated, and operator in interest as well as everybody in the value chain's interests are served, and then the value is distributed proportionately and fairly among all of the participants, right? Not concentrated at one place, right? So, I mean, there are hooks and ways to do it, but I don't see there is a strong blueprint, if you will, on how to make that happen. I think everybody's saying, oh, it's, let's see how it goes, yeah, and so on, right? So what are your views on that?
Yeah, and just to be clear, I think that that was your question. You asked that question, right?
Yeah, I think, and you asked about how operators will monetize APIs.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, and I think the monetization question for the operators is pretty simple. It's you're going to have access to a certain, yeah, either net new market that you didn't have before,
yeah,
and or you will be able to participate in, you know, existing markets where you're going to have access to a larger scale of a market, right? Just simply because this is like an aggregated pool of opportunities is the way that I think a lot of operators are going to be looking at this.
Yeah.
So there's monetization opportunities there, but the big question is on the demand side. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like what you're saying, how big is this pie, and you know, at what level is the bulk of monetization and revenue and profit going to eventually fall?
Yeah.
And you know, I've written about this already several times, and Fierce, you know, Dan Jones, he gets me involved in all these API discussions. And one of the things that I've cited is that, you know, one of the key layers, if you really look at this as like sort of a stack of, you know, value stack, mm-hmm. one of the key layers that needs to start to form or develop is sort of this, what I call the network application layer, right? Because you have these APIs, they're really probably going to be very transactional and you know, sort of narrow in their functions, right? Mm-hmm. So if you go and you look at the Kamara API descriptions, they have like a portfolio of like 30 or so,
yeah,
APIs. These things tend to be pretty narrow in function. Mm-hmm. And where you're probably going to see a lot of value kind of pool, mm-hmm. is at this network application level, where it's either, let's say, a standalone application of some sort. So let's say that it may be
authentication, for example,
fraud,
right?
Yeah, fraud prevention.
Yeah,
but it's a suite of functions that tap into several network APIs.
Yeah,
but that application stitches things together in a more value-adding function or even application,
yeah,
that may or may not plug into a business application, right? And so that's what we're kind of seeing with like what you're saying, authentication. Mm-hmm. You have these new, more efficient, effective ways of authenticating applications, and they don't need to be mobile, by the way,
yeah,
that leverage information and security capabilities of the network, right? And which is actually a really, really interesting paradigm that I think we might not be, you know, a lot of folks might not be tuned into. And so when you start thinking about that network application layer, mm-hmm. That's probably where a lot of that value add is going to happen. But then I guess the hope is that will drive demand for API calls that will then, you know, expand the revenue opportunities for operators. And these, you know, will probably eventually become like net or evolve into net new and differentiated services. So I think that's kind of that dynamic that Ericsson and the NewCo partners that they're hoping for or anticipating,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and I think the question on what are the, you know, the question for operators, obviously, one is for the access to the APIs. I did not get very clear answers from the operators on the panel on, you know, how much they have thought about it, which I think is not concerning, but I think worth noting. Maybe they should think a little bit more beforehand on how they want to monetize it, rather than just, you know, we develop and we'll see how the monetization's later, right? So, and I hope,
and I hope
they don't see access is obviously one of the main things where they'll make money on, and they have to make sure that they price it as such that'll encourage more usage than discourage usage. The pricing should be that, you know, cost effective to access it rather than make it, you know, high end, very exclusive, right? It should be, in my view, more on a revenue share basis for access, and they come up with more progressive and revenue share kind of a model than just fixed or something like
that. Yeah. And I think the key is, you know, pricing for value. And I think it's going to be different for certain, let's say, offerings that might compete with existing paradigms of, let's say, you know, authentication security or, you know, network resource discovery. I don't know. That's why I mentioned this whole network application layer, because that's probably where the end user or the developer is actually going to interface with the network, right? And then underneath, that engagement is going to then translate into a whole, let's say, collection of API calls, and how that gets monetized, cleared, and settled down to the operator. That I think is definitely not as visible at the moment, and I think are things that everyone needs to figure out, not only Ericsson but everybody. I think, you know, one of the things that Ericsson definitely emphasized, as well as the partners, was that this is going to be a journey. This is a starting point, right? This is not like, okay, in 2025, first half, this thing is going to explode and it's going to be the next best thing since sliced bread. This is going to take time. There's a lot of design and execution still that needs to be done. I think that's pretty apparent. The framework's there, right? It's just, how do you execute and position a GMP and the NewCo JV in a way that can serve as a catalyst and drive additional ecosystem value? That's still a big question. It's I think a tough one to answer.
Yeah. And my last point on this one is, for example, when the mobile broadband revolution started, we will build and we'll provide connectivity. Since everything rides on connectivity, we'll have control over it, and we can, you know, monetize in many ways, right? That was the understanding, but the underlying connectivity was given. So value started building up on the top. So my point here is, you know, shouldn't be similar in this case, wherein, okay, the access to APIs is basic and is given. You can't charge me more for this kind of API versus that kind of API. And the mobile broadband model, where it's the commodity that you have access and you cannot differentiate, shouldn't be the case, is my point. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next one. So, you know, we had speakers from Meta, AWS, Google, and other partners, but they're also an investor there. Greg Papadopoulos, Eric had a fireside chat with him, which I think was interesting. I was, you know, encouraged to see that venture community is really thinking that the APIs and the edge AI itself will have a major role to play, especially when the AI workloads move towards inferencing. And inferencing at the edge, right? Than mostly cloud right now.
Yeah. And by Eric, you mean Eric Ekuden.
Eric Ekuden of Ericsson. He had a fireside chat with Greg Papadopoulos.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I mean, you know what?
Correct.
Greg mentioned distributed edge computing quite a bit, which I thought was really interesting. And he also brought up the term federated in the context of AI quite a bit, as well as portability. And so, you know, I think it's a statement of a big problem to be solved, especially if, you know, you have enterprises and even, you know, call them cloud service provider, hyperscalers that want to now propagate that those workloads closer to where things are happening, right? Mm-hmm. And where the services are consumed, and maybe entertaining, new compute architectures that can not only deliver better experiences, but also provide some better economics, you know, better cost, lower cost to serve, hence better margins, right? And that's kind of like what I heard from Greg in terms of the motivation of looking at, you know, like distributed edge AI computing and the network APIs. I think it's just really early stages at the moment based on, you know, sort of how Greg was talking about stuff. But it was interesting to see how him articulate what he thought the role of these new network capabilities that are exposed through APIs could have in enabling these new architectures, right? Especially if you overlay, let's say, AI. You know, there's all this talk about AI RAN and stuff like that. But I guess it begs the question, what is the role of the RAN and the network and these APIs in bringing about these federated and distributed computing models for AI? And I don't know. I kind of thought they were talking about generative AI because AI is already out there. You know what I'm saying?
Correct.
Non-generative AI is already out there. I just kind of thought, okay, this dude's talking about generative AI.
Correct. Yeah, generative AI at the edge. And I think the point he mentioned, which I've written a lot about as well, is basically you have the compute on devices, which is already paid for by the users.
Yeah.
So incentivizing for the AI folks to push as much processing to these devices or things on the edge for which they don't have to pay the compute. So reduce the compute need at the cloud, which is very cost effective for them. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and then, I mean, it was more of a device player pitch like Qualcomm, MediaTek and others. But it was interesting to see that VC, who very often talks to and invests in the app developer ecosystem, being bullish about that.
Right.
That was interesting to hear. Okay. So the next one on our app ecosystem, there was a nice panel there as well on how the app ecosystem is developing. What are the things in the use cases that they're using primarily right now for OSS and BSS and portability between different vendors and so on. Right. So I think our app is still at a very early stage. But that's where I see, you know, of course, APIs is one area where app developer ecosystem will have a major role in terms of coming into the 5G ecosystem, benefiting from it. And our apps is another way, you know, even going back to this Open RAN idea that even small companies can enter into the telecom ecosystem. I don't know in the radio and the RAN space that is happening or not, but our apps is a place where smaller, nimble app developers can come in, provide very sophisticated applications and services and kind of enter the large telecom ecosystem, right? Which was very hard for them till now.
Yeah, and I thought the talk about SMO was really interesting. I don't necessarily, so our apps themselves are probably pretty early in the adoption phase. Just simply because there aren't a lot of RICs out there. There's folks that are dabbling with it and, you know, deploying SMOs and service management orchestration platforms and such. But I think this is an important entry point for a lot of companies that are looking at undergoing an Open RAN, let's say Open RAN-ish transformation, or let's say revamping of their or evolution of their network infrastructure. And yeah, it was interesting to see them bring this up as being an important tool and a way of like rationalizing your portfolio of SON tooling and capabilities, right? I mean, and I think that, you know, I've written about this quite extensively and for a long time, that this is that integration hub. You know, like whenever you're doing a transformation, one of the things that you look for are those integration hubs and middleware that allow you to have that kind of interoperability, flexible interoperability, without necessarily having to have this perfect standardization of interfaces, right? Yeah. You have a tool that allows you to connect a system on one side of your network that might be of a certain technology, might be purpose-built, with something that is more open or standards-based. You know, it gives you that flexibility. And so, you know, it's interesting to see them bring that to the forefront. And, you know, I think if they continue to get some traction amongst operators in seeing the value of SMO and RIC as a target tool set, then you're going to see our apps start to flourish. And so we'll see, right? Yeah. But we're talking about our apps. A couple of years ago, everyone was getting excited about X apps, right?
Yeah.
That didn't quite fly, right?
Definitely, RApps has more legs than XApps, right? So, and you're right. We started asking questions to people about SMO. People are still figuring it out what it is, why do you need it, and so on. But now there is realization that SMO is key, and there are multiple players, you know, infrastructure players themselves, third-party players trying to get into that space. That will become really interesting. And that kind of becomes kind of a gateway into the network, right?
Yeah.
So that will be very strategic. So
exactly.
Whether the traditional telco infra players will play a key role there.
Yeah.
Or third-party software companies who have much bigger expertise there will rule that market. It will be interesting to see. So SMO space is one hell of an interesting thing to keep looking at.
Yeah. Well, you know, AT&T is definitely moving forward with it. So it's a key enabler for their network transfer.
All right. So, last thing, connected PC enterprise pilots, right? So that was an interesting idea. So basically, Ericsson is doing a pilot wherein you replace all connectivity in enterprises with connected PCs. So basically, you take out your Wi-Fi and wired network in your offices and replace that with PCs, which are cellular connected all the time. So I think it's an ongoing pilot, but they presented interesting results wherein, since you don't have to maintain an IT network of your own, all of that cost is gone for you as an enterprise. And only thing we have is basically paying for a connectivity module in your laptop and the connectivity service from an operator. So the pilot they did, they seem to show that it is economically more beneficial to just rely on the cellular network for all connectivity, not just when you're traveling or something like that, but even for your in-office connectivity. So we'll see how that goes, but that's an interesting idea. On the face of it,
yeah,
Wi-Fi looks much cost-effective and cheaper compared to cellular. But when you look at all the equipment you need to maintain it, people needed to maintain it, upgrade costs and so on, Ericsson claims will end up becoming higher than having a cellular connectivity.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of boils down to like sort of this on-premise infrastructure and having to maintain that. And looking at not just Wi-Fi, but holistically of managing and hosting your own network locally versus... sort of this what they call infrastructure light, right? And like, hey, look, you know, the operator already has infrastructure up, they have spectrum, they have, you know, you have the devices, rather than doing any of this build out that you'd have to do to host your network and manage your network on premise, why don't we just use the operator's network and you just piggyback on top of it, and we'll provide you with tools and the cloud-based, if you will, administration platforms to manage your network without having to deploy anything on site. You're going to be just connecting to cell towers or that local cell tower that is going to service your particular facility or office. And so it's a bold vision. It's, I do have questions on what sort of scenarios and what kind of companies would this value proposition, appeal to, who would actually entertain this, because this is kind of a mindset shift, right?
Yeah, it's making a cellular primary connectivity vehicle, right? So, yeah. But I think it's an interesting idea. Of course, it is self-serving for the cellular community.
Yeah,
but it is an interesting idea, especially capacity on these networks is increasing so much.
Yeah.
For many use cases where users are not heavy broadband users, like office connectivity, I think. And if you're an average user, it's not that crazy, right?
Yeah.
So interesting idea. We'll see how the results come out.
Yeah.
And of course, there are issues of you have to have perfect coverage everywhere. What happens if there is no coverage at a corner of an office? I know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Some of the things that popped into mind were like pop-up stores. That might be perfect for this. Also, like a WeWork-ish kind of office for hire type of environment for some of those companies that are a little bit more mobile and maybe scale up and down, as part of their business. That's where this type may appeal, but it's novel.
Yeah, although they were suggesting, I talked to a few people who are in the pilot on the sidelines. Their target is not just special cases. The target is any average enterprise, like office building, not a shop or a stuff like that. And this is basically you have a laptop with a 5G connectivity and no Wi-Fi in your office. We'll see how that goes. So yeah. All right. So I think we talked enough, right? Lot of interesting ideas. So I want to give a plug on where people can find your research and your insights.
Yeah, sure. Just go to www.next-curve.com. I have a media center there where you can find access to all my media content, as well as, a research portal where you can access my publicly available research.
Okay. All right. So that was a great discussion, Leonard. Thank you for sharing your insights. And thanks again for coming on our show. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So folks, that's all we have for now. I hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening this on. I'll be back soon with another episode, putting light on another interesting tech subject. Bye-bye for now.